Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Match Slip Podcast. I'm your host, Frank Angeloni. I want to thank you for joining us today. On today's show, we're talking with Antonio from Warp Storm Games and Lounge, and they're located in Wisconsin, and we'll get a little bit more of the details of where in Wisconsin they are. I'll let Antonio speak about that. If you haven't listened to our most recent episode, you could do so by listening to Anubis Games interview, which we recorded previously. But on today's show, we're talking to Warp Storm Games and Lounge, and I want to bring Antonio onto the show today. Antonio, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, thanks.
I'm glad to have you today. So what could you tell us, Antonio, about your connection to the gaming industry? What drew you into it and to ultimately start Warp Storm Games and Lounge?
You know, it's funny how things end up just kind of materializing in a way that you didn't expect. You know, like when I was a kid and growing up, games were kind of just like a part of life. I live in Wisconsin, and very famously, there's a lot of nerddom that takes place here. 1 hour away is Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, which is where Gary Gygax created Dungeons & Dragons. I live in Milwaukee, which is where the very first packs of Magic the Gathering ever got sold. And so, like, you do have, especially growing up in, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, a connection to that gaming culture. And so it was always just kind of a part of my life. But there was never a moment where I really thought that that would be my career. As I got into the workforce, I did a lot of different things, and eventually ended with, sales. I was doing, telecom, and, eventually became a store manager for, local, cell phone retailers. And then eventually, having had, retail sales management experience, a open rec came across my, you know, computer one day, where the Games Workshop in the area was looking for a manager. And I had never considered doing a job that was also in games. So I thought, yeah, I'll throw in my hat. We'll see what happens. And they hired me, and I, you know, ran that store for 3 years, and it was an absolute blast. And at some point I thought, I love this, and I want to be able to do this with more options and more leeway and more runway, and decided to venture off. I was actually lucky at the time. My girlfriend's sister and her fiance and a couple of friends, they all were trying to do a similar thing at the same time. And we decided to, as a big group, open up Warp Storm.
And so you had mentioned, which caught my attention, I didn't actually know this myself, with the, you know, the first pack of Magic cards, like you mentioned, being produced in Milwaukee. I didn't know about that. Can you talk about that a little bit more and how that's transitioned into, you know, how the popularity is for gaming in Wisconsin?
Yeah. As far as I know, I don't actually know where they were produced, but I know that they were first sold here at the Gen Con in 1993, if I'm not mistaken. In the early 90s and up until, I think, 2003, Gen Con, which is now, if I'm not mistaken, the largest tabletop gaming convention in the country, and I think only the second largest in the world, that was held in Milwaukee. And it was held in Milwaukee primarily, I think, because at first it was held actually in Lake Geneva, which is where Dungeons & Dragons was created. So it just kind of was this like focused community of tabletop gamers that eventually did a convention, and the convention got larger, then it got moved to Milwaukee. And then in Milwaukee, it got so big that it had to be moved to a city that had more hotels, as far as I know, if the rumors are true, or if, you know, my recollection serves me. But the first packs of Magic were sold in 1993 as a part of Gen Con. And I think it was just, it wasn't necessarily that that this was like specifically the place where it needed to be sold. It just happened to be the site for the largest gaming convention at the time. And so it's always kind of held a place as, at the very least in my mind, in my heart, the way that I see it, Southeastern Wisconsin kind of seems like the mecca for tabletop gaming. And like, this may seem like a stretch, and maybe I'm just talking a little bit romantically, but the reason Games Workshop has Warhammer was because they had reached out to Gary Gygax in order to sell Dungeons and Dragons over in the UK. And Gary Gygax, for some reason, was just really into the idea and made an exclusive deal with them. So Games Workshop really took off as a company. They were able to really get in and corner that market pretty early on, and then eventually developed miniatures first for D&D and then miniatures for their own proprietary game system. And so in my mind, in some way, Southeastern Wisconsin is really responsible for a tremendous amount of what we consider the tabletop gaming arena now.
And which game, or whether it be Dungeons and Dragons or tabletop, what was your favorite growing up and to this day? Like, what do you find yourself still being drawn to?
So even though I would consider myself one of the big, like, or a big three gamer, which is kind of just how I refer to people who do miniature war gaming, CCGs, and role-playing games, I primarily do role-playing games. D&D has kind of been my big game for the last 10 years or so. I really got into it after having a bad experience with the DM and thought, well, I could probably DM for my group if they wanted me to, and then just kind of became the forever DM, and that just became my game. And it's actually how I got hired at Games Workshop when I did because I didn't actually play Warhammer at the time, but I played a lot of D&D, and they're just like, that's probably close enough.
Do you feel that your time at Games Workshop helped prepare you for what you're doing now with Warp Storm Games?
Yeah, I'd say a tremendous amount. The community building aspect of the way that Games Workshop does their business is very specific and integral to the way that we do our business. I think Games Workshop really hit the nail on the head as far as what they see their stores as and what they don't see their stores as. Especially during the time that I was there, I didn't get the sense that GW had a view of their own retail stores as sales stores. They kind of saw them as places where people could learn about the game, regardless of where they were going to buy it. And so the big push while working at a GW store was teach people the game, like really make sure that whatever barriers they do have with getting into the game, that they're not barriers of inexperience or a lack of education. Or a lack of information. I'm sorry. If those are the only barriers, then those barriers shouldn't exist. And I really loved that idea that, like, you could just by the nature of how fun these games are, teach people how to enjoy the things that they like kind of see as barriers of entry. And then once they're past that, well, then, you know, like then there's nothing stopping them from enjoying the real fun of these games. And so now I here at Warp, we have this thing called the Warpstorm Gaming Academy, which is free classes for any of the games in order to learn how to do them. So like in the case of GW or in the case of miniature gaming specifically, we're doing like free classes on how to play the games, but also free classes on how to paint. And I've developed my own 2-hour painting lesson where I just sit with people and teach them how to do, smooth coats and how to thin paint, how to use shades and how to do dry brushing and line highlighting, which once you sit down and do it, especially over the course of 2 hours, you realize, oh, this is actually not that tough and actually kind of fun. And then, you know, like if that was the barrier for you getting into the game where you're thinking, well, the game looks cool, but I can never paint. Well, now, you know, you can paint, and getting into the game has, you know, just less barriers.
What difficulties did you find with trying to set up the academy in the early start of it all?
You know, it's kind of a thing that doesn't really have a lot of difficulties. I think maybe the one difficulty that you could say for other people trying to do the same thing is trying to develop a good, consistent, clean, precise, curriculum. You know, like the idea of teaching somebody how to do something is a lot harder in practice, because you find that as you're trying to teach somebody, it's very easy to get like sidetracked or be long-winded or end up doing something that actually is a little bit outside of the skill level for the person that you're teaching, or maybe the opposite. Sometimes you're teaching something that is obvious and you're just kind of wasting time. It's how long is the class and how long is too long, versus if I go too fast, did they ever actually really learn something? Am I using the right materials? You know, like, am I covering all the tools that they're going to need? Am I really setting up this person to have an ability to find information and find answers when they're not around me? So like there's a lot that goes into the building of the classes that I feel like my experience with Games Workshop really helped to solidify. But if I had to say that there was one difficulty, it would just only be that, because really from that point forward, the way that we do the classes is by appointment. So, you know, you don't have to try to make a specific time window or anything like that. You could just say, oh, I'm available at this date, and then me or one of my business partners will be here to teach those classes. And they're always one-on-one. They're a lot more there's a lot less anxiety. There's a lot less like self-consciousness when it's one-on-one. You don't feel like you have to be performing or try to outperform other people in your class. You can just kind of sit down and in a really relaxed way, really learn this thing. And I try to keep everything as casual as possible, as informal as possible. I mean, obviously I am performing a service and it is a thing that is in a professional setting, but I also like to let people know that this is a hobby store. We are just people and you are just learning a new skill from a person who just has that skill. You know, like I didn't go to school to paint. I just over the course of the 3 years that I was at GW painted every day and you know, found things that worked for me, you know, watched tutorials that some of them were really good for intros, and I would adopt some of that stuff. And I also siphoned through a lot of the things that I felt like weren't necessarily good for a beginner to learn how to do. Like, for instance, I always get people that don't know how to paint. They always come in and they go, oh, you know, I'm here to buy three different primers. You know, like I got to buy a dark primer, a mid-grade primer, and a really bright primer so that I can do a Zenithal prime. And I always let them know, listen, man, Zenithal priming is really great, and it's phenomenal when you're doing glaze work, when you're working with an airbrush, when you're doing some competition level stuff. But if you're new to painting, I wouldn't worry so much about Zenithal. You know, like I know that the YouTube videos will say, you know, like here's some really quick hacks to be able to paint really fast, and like, I think once you have more experience, Zenithal priming will make, you know, more of a difference. But especially at first, when you're working with really solid colors, when you're making sure that all of your base paints are completely solid, you're doing lots of layers, you're not going to see that undercoat. And so, you know, don't waste your money, and, you know, also a little bit don't waste your time, and, you know, just start at a different kind of with a different idea. And so really it's just experience and making sure that people know that, like, oh, also that I'm infallible, or that I'm not infallible. Like there's a good amount of just me giving you what works for me. But, you know, at some point you're going to start calling audibles on your own. And I like to set people up for that.
I think the one-on-one concept that you instituted is a phenomenal idea. I mean, it makes it, you know, a lot easier for whoever you're teaching this new skill to make it easier for them. What has been the feedback you've received from customers on doing these learn to, you know, play, learn to paint scenarios with the Academy? What is the feedback you've gotten?
So it's been overwhelmingly positive in that there hasn't been a single person that has taken a class and not really found like it was a useful use of their time. It's always been met with, you know, a really positive reception. People really thank us and then keep coming back, which is kind of like, it's a little bit the point. The idea is that, what we're doing is we're teaching you how to get into a community. We're using that as a part of the community building. And so far it has been one of the most effective things that we do, specifically because it's a person who is sitting down with you and really giving you the time to ask questions and to not feel like you're bothering them. You know, like there a lot when I was getting into certain games, I would go into stores and really this is not like a condemnation of any of the stores in the area. I really do enjoy all of the people that have their stores in the area. They've got some great stores that I frequented most of my life. But one of the things that I would find is that I always had a lot of apprehension in asking questions to these already established communities and established community heads. I would walk in and mostly just kind of be watching and learning in that way. And that's kind of the way that we all learn. But with GW's approach and with the approach that we've kind of expanded on here, the idea is that it doesn't have to be that way. You can just go up to a professional, and without any kind of judgment or hesitation, that professional can give you all of the nuanced answers that they can provide, given that, like, a part of what you should see your role as a store owner when it comes to a community-oriented game or a community-oriented activity is that you are kind of the person who is a little bit responsible for getting new people into the game, because you're the one that has all the answers. And so when people sit down with us and we do the one-on-one painting classes and all that, I really make sure that off the bat, I tell people, hey, this is your opportunity to ask me whatever question you want, and know that I'm not gonna be irritated about it, because that's the point of the class. You know, it really is structured so that you can have this time to make this like about answering your personal questions. Like, my curriculum is specific and it is rehearsed, but it's also flexible, and wherever people want to know something specific, I'm happy to teach them. And so because of that, we have a tremendous amount of repeat customers that come here, they learn to play, they learn to paint, and then they just kind of see this as like, well, this is the place where I know that I can be at my most comfortable as an intro gamer. And the more that they do that, the more they just kind of like see this as their third place. Which is a little bit of what we wanted to be from the beginning. You know, like, we love the idea of a third place. It's actually in our our store motto. It's in our kind of our creed, which is that we miss third places. You see third places less and less in the world. It's kind of just like home and then work and then home again, and you try to do everything online. But you know, that third place was in the past very essential to the way that, you know, communities and societies kind of just like cohabited and coexisted. And so we love the idea of creating a space for, you know, like, you to just to be able to come and hang out and have a lot of people that you know are patient, that you also know are new. You know, like, another one of the kind of side effects of creating a store based around a lot of this new intro activities is that you get a lot of new players, and a lot of new players means that everybody's just kind of learning together, or they just went through that process. And so they're more patient with people that are learning. You don't have a lot of that like established kind of gatekeeping mentality where you're just like, well, you got to try to keep up. Instead, here, almost everybody that plays in games here has some kind of connection to recently starting something, and so there's a lot more patience for it.
And with running these academies, how have you noticed, since I see on the website you offer them for free, which I think is very generous, how have you seen that translate into sales? Because it seems like a perfect marketing strategy to offer this for free, get people interested that want to learn something new, and then, you know, you hope, and like you said, they come back and maybe they'll buy something from that. How has that transaction been from your experience?
Well, so like, there's a couple of good ideas that are attached to showing somebody something new as far as retail goes. And that is that when somebody is learning something and that's their only barrier of entry, once they learn that thing, then that barrier of entry is gone. And especially with tabletop games, we more often than not see that the people who seriously get into tabletop games are people who are in a financial situation where they have some amount of disposable income. And generally speaking, I don't know how you are, but this is definitely the way that I am. When I have disposable income, I spend it on my hobbies. And so more often than not, the financial situation of a human being is not the thing that's stopping them from playing games. It's just the not knowing or the not being able to do it or the thinking that they can't. And so when we do these classes, a lot of what you see is that once those barriers of entry are gone, then it's just like, okay, cool, I'm in. What do I need to buy? And actually, a lot of the The classes are structured so that, like I said earlier, it's so that you know how to problem solve the things that you need or the answers that you don't have. And so we make sure during the classes to make sure that you know what tools you need. Like, for example, during the painting lesson, I'll show you what brushes are really good. I'll show you, you know, like what we use for paint palettes and why paint palettes are important. I'll show you how the painting handles work and how to use them effectively to get better angles and to increase your or improve your stability. And so when I'm going through all of these things, I'm showing you the painting wand so that you can go outside and prime no matter what weather it is. So like I'm kind of like showing you all of the ways that like these tools have made painting easier. And we carry all that stuff because we are a game store, you know, like we are a retail store. And so once it's done and you're in and you like it and you know that this is a thing that you're going to be able to enjoy in the long term, you go, okay, just, you know, where is all this stuff? And then, yeah, like on average, even though the classes are free, we do average probably around $150 per class for the painting class as far as like setting you up with all of your paints, all of your tools, and then the new minis that you want to paint. So yeah, it does translate into sales. You know, like when we do a Learn to Play Warhammer, for instance, we have a pretty large Warhammer orphanage. You know, like what we call the Warhammer orphanage is like a new to use section. It's essentially like a resale section where a lot of people who are done playing either the game or they're done playing a specific army, they want to get out of it, and then they go, okay, well, how can I turn this into a different army or maybe a different game? We buy used Warhammer models. We sell them at a discount in our new to use section. And so a lot of times what we'll see is if players come in who want to play Warhammer, who don't know how to play Warhammer, once the class is done, then they start looking at the retail section. They see that they can buy a tremendous army for, you know, a discounted price. And a lot of times they just pick up their new army right there.
That's very cool. You know, you have a lot of variety and uniqueness, I feel, to the store. You're the first store I've spoken to that has these types of, you know, this in-depth learning of classes. I've talked to another store with Millennium Games who does a similar thing of, you know, trying out something before you buy it. I like, though, your whole concept here of almost it's like part school in a way, but in the less, you know, overwhelming side where there's, you know, so many students in a class rather than, and like you mentioned, with taking it one-on-one. During the founding of the store, when did this all kind of come together? Like from the store name to, you know, deciding that you were going to do something like this. And, you know, I know it stems from your time from your previous job, like you were mentioning, but how did the whole Warp Storm idea and origin come together to be like, okay, this is how we're going to flesh out our business idea, and this is what we're going to offer our community of players?
You know, it's so funny, like looking back at, you know, just kind of how things just coalesce and the just kind of serendipitous, coincidental situations that happened. But like, during COVID, when everything was shut down, I couldn't have people gaming at the store. In fact, for 3 months, I had to close down the store, which is really nice of Games Workshop to send us home and to keep paying us during the time. So like, I'm very grateful to them. But during that time, I also, you know, I missed gaming. I didn't have a place to game with. So during that time, my girlfriend and her sister own a coffee shop in St. Francis. And what we would do is, even though they were closed, that was kind of our meeting spot on Saturday mornings. And we would go in the mornings and tailgate. we would play. We would set up a table in their parking lot, and we would play some like War Cry or Kill Team or Magic the Gathering. I was just getting into Magic during the pandemic. That was just one of my pandemic hobbies. And so while that was happening, there was a new brewery opening up next door to the coffee shop named Falklandia, and they had a game store in there that was run by my now business partners, Quinn Kotecki and Alex Carr. And so they had a game store there, and they were just opening it up. And during that time, me and like a lot of the people that I used to game with at Warhammer, they kind of didn't have a place to play. So we started playing there, and they were really nice. They were super receptive. They played a lot of Magic. And so we, you know, like we, but they had a lot of space. And so we were like, can we play Warhammer here? And they were, yeah, they're absolutely. So slowly but surely that community started kind of to merge, and we were having a lot of fun. I was having a lot of fun playing there. In fact, on my days off, because it was a brewery too, like I would just go from work, I would go straight to Falklandia. I would game there at night. I was playing a lot more Magic at the time. And then, and you know, again, have a couple of beers, and I started becoming pretty close with the ownership there. And then, randomly, my girlfriend's sister started dating Quinn, one of the owners of the gaming store, and so this kind of group just started becoming a lot more, you know, like. Close. We started, you know, like that bond just started becoming a lot more actually friendly, in a way that like superseded business. And then their community started growing in a way that they could not really like really contain anymore. There was not a lot of space where they were, because it was just kind of like a side room in the brewery. And as the community started growing, they started looking for a larger space. And around that time, I had just gotten back from Gen Con and decided that I wanted to do retail gaming on my own, because I was very impressed upon when I went to Gen Con a couple of years ago, when I realized that like the gaming community was very large. There was too much fun stuff out there, and I was very limited by the ability to only sell one game, and my passion for this had grown so much, and my experience with it, because I had done retail sales for 6 years before I got into Games Workshop. And then I did another 3 with Games Workshop. So it was just a lot of very targeted, specific retail sales experience now with a focus in gaming and community building. And I was like, no, I kind of want to do this on my own. And so I left GW. And at that same time, Quinn and Alex and one of their friends, Alex, who also worked at Falklandia, were like, no, we want to start this together. And thankfully, my girlfriend's sister Liz, she was well versed in opening businesses by this point, and the five of us together, me, Liz, the two Alexes, and Quinn, all decided, hey, let's do something crazy and open up something together. And because we had gamed together so much, they had a tournament series going called Warp Storm Tournament Series. And when we were trying to come up with a name, I was like, well, the Warp Storm thing already exists, you know, like that's a brand that people are already recognizing. It's a name that people already know.
Easy transition.
Yeah, why don't we just keep it Warp Storm? And they were just like, yeah, that sounds great. And so we named it Warp Storm. I have a little bit of a background in graphic design, and I knew I wanted to change the logo a little bit to have it feel a little bit more retail and less tournament-y. So I reached out to a couple of graphic designers and worked with them to develop our new branding. We chose new colors. You know, we were a lot more targeted as far as the branding goes, because now it was going to be a branding with longevity. It was going to be something that could work for us in perpetuity. So there was a lot of work put into that. But yeah, we all had different backgrounds. You know, Quinn and Alex were a lot more focused on the card gaming, and I had, you know, the knowledge of the miniature side. Alex and I are both long term DMs, and so there was just a lot of like good ideas from people who had a lot of experience. And Liz, who owns a coffee shop, came to us, pitched the idea of having a boba bar, like a tea and boba bar, be a part of the retail experience and have a lounge where we could do anime and we could do manga and we could do boba tea. And that's also a super successful part of our business now, where our store really is like three tiered. You know, there's the gaming, there's the retail, and then there's the lounge area. And it's just like it really is taking all five of us to be able to make it happen, because I mean, even 2-3 people, this would just be too much of a behemoth to be able to steer. But thankfully it was five people who communicate well, who have a consistent and, you know, like oftentimes unified vision to do something that like really you don't see so much in retail these days, but hopefully are seeing more and more of.
The way you described it all, you know, from how it all formed, has a very family feel. I mean, granted, you were all friends, but just the way it all kind of came together, you know, it even though is, you know, it's not a typical, you know, family business. It still feels that way with the fact that you all knew each other, you were friends, and you all had these various areas of expertise to kind of bring it all together.
Yeah, you know, it really feels like that too. You know, like a lot of the way that we discuss things is not very it's not very corporate. In fact, all of us, because we're all relatively young, you know, like we're all in our 30s, and so none of us are from an older school of retail, which I like to describe as a storefront retail. You know, like none of us really have that storefront retail like mentality. All of us have an experiential retail mentality. And so we all come to it with this like new school kind of like way of communicating with each other. And because we were friends before this started, when we sit down once a month as the five owners to sit down and to really workshop everything that's come up in the last, you know, 30 days, it's a lot of just like, you know, like a lot of times we do it over dinner and we just kind of sit down and we talk about, you know, like our focus areas, how they're doing, where they can be improved. We've got an active Trello where we're always like looking at what other people are working on to see if we can kind of help with what they're doing whenever we have some free time. You know, like we're always there to kind of like, you know, like lean on each other whenever we're having difficulties in whatever focus area that we're working on, and, you know, to provide insight and stuff. So it really has been kind of a blessing to be able to work with more than just your own mind. You know, like it's, you know, like I came up with an idea for merchandise that I wanted to sell, you know, like t-shirts and stuff. And when I was just bouncing the idea off of Quinn was just like, oh, why don't we do, you know, something like this? And I'm just like, that's great. You know, like I love that there is this opportunity to not have to come up with every single possible idea. You have other experienced, talented people around you that can come up with things that you could never think of based on their own experience. So yeah, it has been kind of like working with a family. You know, there's a lot of camaraderie. It's a lot of like toned down. It really doesn't feel like some kind of like investor organization. It feels like a bunch of friends who were like, no, I think that if we can work together, we can do it.
We're going to take a quick break from this podcast to talk about our sponsor, Cardboard Shuffle. Cardboard Shuffle was our 10th podcast interview here at the Match Slip with store owner Mark. Mark has expanded his brand and has produced his own card sleeves called Shuffle Shields. Shuffle Shields come in packs of 100 premium matte card sleeves for standard size trading cards. They contain no PVC and are acid free. I have 17 packs of Shuffle Shields card sleeves to give away to listeners of the podcast and followers of the Match Slip on social media. Requests for a free pack of card sleeves shipped for free to you will be processed on a first-come, first-served basis. To receive your free pack of Shuffle Shields, you'll need to send a screenshot that you're following Cardboard Shuffle on Facebook to frank@thematchlip.com. Good luck, and back to the episode. And you all started together, I saw on the website, in 2022?
Yeah, so actually so funny, 2 days ago on the 3rd was the day that we got the keys to this place. So we got the keys exactly 1 year ago, 2 days ago.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. You know, like we made it a year. So I hear that that's one of the tougher parts. So yeah, we're all very happy about that.
How's it been going, would you say, so far within this, like now you have a year to reflect on?
So I'll tell you, man, I'm blown away by what we've been able to accomplish together here. It really is startling. You know, I laugh a lot about me and one of the other Alexes, Alex Muick, early on when we were tearing up carpet squares and you know, painting walls. There was a moment where I looked at him and I said, damn, but can you imagine 1 year from now, like how crazy this is going to look? And I don't think either of us had the capacity to imagine what this place was going to look like 1 year from now. But yeah, a lot of these crazy ideas that we've had over the last year have been succeeding steadily. And like one of the crazier things that we've done, so before we opened the store, I was running a like my plan was to run a MMO D&D game. Like that's the idea. That's where it was birthed. And I had four groups of friends. It was 15 people that were playing in this D&D world with me, and they would all play once a month. But in my mind, I'm like, one day I'll be able to have a lot of groups in this world, and it'll be like a real MMO game. And then, you know, like I pitched the idea to these guys when we first opened, and they were just like, yeah, that sounds really cool. We could probably get it done. When we did the first season, we had 28 people sign up for it. So I think in the end it was like or 22 people, I think. So it was like 27 or 28 people at, or 30, 37, 38 people at its max. And it was like, I don't know, like eight groups or seven groups, something like that. And it was a 6-month campaign. The 20 people that signed up, it's $40 a session per person. And it's a 4-hour game once a month. So, you know, like we had 28 people or 22 people sign up and it was a blast. We did 6 months for season two, which just started, on the first of this month. We had 100% retention. So every single person that played in season one played in season two. Now we're up to 50 people, 10 groups with 5 people apiece, playing once a month. I'm running 79 games from here to March, but it's like this like really crazy idea of doing this like living world MMO style D&D game where like everybody's actions affect everybody else. There's crossover games where you play with strangers. There's like event loot. There's like an active Discord where people are like talking in character and swapping stories and sharing memes about the things that are happening in world. And so like, yeah, these ideas thankfully have like culminated, but I think it really is a result of everybody being able to lean on each other. You know, like one person alone really is just not able to do a lot of what can be imagined. It really takes kind of a group of like-minded people to do it. And so, yeah, we've been very lucky to see these big wild ideas kind of take root and just become something that we could have never expected.
That's phenomenal growth in just the very first year. Would you say that the role-playing games are what's most popular at your store when compared to the other events that you guys hold?
You know, not really. I'd say we have pretty equal representation across most of the stuff that we do. When it comes to tabletop games, like the tabletop miniatures games, we have really active communities for Warhammer and for Song of Ice and Fire, which I kind of poo-pooed a lot when it first came out because I love the setting. The Song of Ice and Fire setting is my favorite setting, but I kind of don't like rank and file games, and I finally gave it an opportunity not long ago, and man, has it just been a blast. So we've got really good communities and campaigns going for Ice and Fire, for Marvel Crisis Protocol, for Warhammer in both the, you know, 40K and AOS. We do a lot of very popular tournaments that have good turnouts. When it comes to card games, we've seen a tremendous amount of support and consistency with Lorcana, which is a game I think that a lot of people sold like they expected to be a one and done kind of situation. And we made a big decision and decided to sell it as close to MSRP as possible, you know, as you know, whatever our margins could handle. And just kind of do right by the community, because the idea was to actually play the game long term, and it was really well received. You know, obviously we sold out of all of our stock because we were selling it at, you know, near MSRP, but the what that created was this like real consistent community that comes in and plays a ton. And then yeah, our RPGs obviously are pretty huge. We've got 50 people playing in our store RPG, and then we've got a Wednesday group that plays Old School Essentials. We've got a group that plays Vampire, and a group that plays Shadowrun, and it's just a blast. Oh, and a couple of Sunday groups for D&D too. So yeah, it's been a really great reception as far as the games that we play. You know, we're lucky enough that that the games that we love are thankfully the games that are being played at the store.
And I saw your calendar. You have multiple events that you hold per day. And with that in mind, from new versus returning players, what is the ratio you see there for versus, you know, new people coming to the store versus returning players? And how are you able to facilitate having that, you know, multiple games going on per day?
You know, one of the cool things about having a store, so like we were lucky in the store that we found, you know, this store used to be a game store before we got in here, and it was probably the biggest game store from here to Madison. And then during COVID, unfortunately, this store had to close. But when we were looking for a location, we were lucky enough that the store was still available. It was still vacant. And so we figured out a contract that would work for us, or a lease agreement that would work for us. And then we now run a 5,200 square foot store, which is absolutely massive. And so we really do just have the space to accommodate all of these different things. We have seating for 48 people for the CCG tables. We've got six 4x6 tables in the regular gaming area. We have a D&D room, and then in the lounge we have more 4x6 tables, more long the 3x8s, so, or the 2x8s. So there's a ton of space. So like when it comes to, like, for instance, hosting like Lorcana and 40K at the same time, well, there's just a lot of table space, so you don't really have to worry about whether or not it's going to get crowded or not. You know, like on Wednesdays, we have our Commander Night, and that just gets absolutely packed. But if you're trying to play Warhammer, if you're trying to play Marvel Crisis Protocol, if you're trying to play Ice and Fire, there's more than enough space. And then at the same time, you can have somebody renting the D&D room or just playing in the lounge. And so, yeah, it's very easy to accommodate a tremendous community when you have nothing but space.
And I have this idea in my head, and I want you to let me know if it's true or not. With your unique thing that you mentioned about the Academy earlier, I have almost this assumption that you would have an easier method of bringing in new people that maybe another store might not, because of that unique value add you're offering.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the idea is always centered around community growth. You know, like in retail, you hear this number all the time that a healthy growth is 5% year over year. And like, that's like really the way that we saw it when I was in sales, is that 5% is the number that you're trying to hit in order not to get fired. But you're not going to ever get promoted seeing a 5% growth year over year. That's just kind of like the absolute bottom of the bar. So like what we're trying to shoot for is 20 or more percent growth year over year. And like that's kind of just like the businessy retail side of like the mechanical side of the way that we see the business. But how do you get that? I mean, you can't force people to play games, but the cool thing about games is that people kind of want to play them. So the mentality was, well, just eliminate barriers, and as long as you take the time to eliminate those barriers and you have an effective way of doing it, you will see that growth. And the way that you see that growth is that people come into your store, they see a game they want to play, they are taught to play the game, they're given all the tools that they need to play the game, and then they just play the game. And because they're doing it at your store, then you're seeing that return customer, you're seeing that consistent growth. And you know, like, and if it really is a fun place to play, you're seeing that those return customers create more return customers for you. And even though this is our first year, And obviously you can expect that the first year less people know about you, and so it's a little bit of a harder start, we have seen a tremendous amount of people and customership and traffic coming through the store from word of mouth, from, you know, like our ads online, and from just the idea that they can come here to learn. And so, yeah, like that is a value add, and it's a value add that like we take very seriously, and it's a value add that has seen a lot of return for us.
And with that growth continuing, and it seems like you're on the right track, and it's great to hear, how is that factor in for the margins? Because as most people know, margins are typically low in a game store, but with this unique element that you have, and, you know, people hearing about you through word of mouth and, you know, getting people into these games, how is that translated into, you know, being able to handle the low margins as we know that game stores are typically run into?
Yeah, So like we do things like our mentality is a little different as far as like retail goes. So like I said earlier, I had mentioned that like none of us have this like idea that we should be a storefront retail location. And like this old brick and mortar idea of a storefront is just, as far as I see it, the way that I've seen the retail trends and the way that I see the markets moving, especially since COVID, it really is just kind of an antiquated idea. The new retail idea should be experiential retail, and experiential retail has existed. It's existed for a long time. GW's been doing it for a while, but places like, you know, like the Apple stores and things like that, places that are more showrooms, this is like kind of the trend that we're seeing as far as like how things need to change in order to accommodate the way that people shop these days. And you're right. And it's because of margins, really, necessarily, because margins are not great, especially with giant online warehouses like Amazon, absolutely obliterating any kind of just basic retail store. You know, you can't just have a storefront if you expect to compete something like Amazon, because Amazon has an entirely different overhead, where like they're not necessarily paying people to teach you, they're not necessarily paying for nice furnishings. They're not necessarily paying for pretty lighting. They don't have to, you know, get boba in there. They are just paying for the space and then, you know, like the people to move the items and from what I hear, not great. And so the idea is that you can't just have a store that doesn't do or that doesn't find ways of making money outside of just selling stuff. So like the first and foremost, the one thing that we do is that we have to work in our operating costs into our prices. And so that's why earlier I mentioned that we sold it as close to MSRP as possible, as close to MSRP that we can afford. Because the reality is that when you create a space, a real like premium location where there's like a 52-inch TV screen inside of a D&D table and smart lighting and you know, like a boba bar and, you know, like nice terrain for all the tables, like that money has to come from somewhere. And MSRP doesn't really pay for that. If you're going straight MSRP margins, it's not going to cut it in trying to maintain a premium location, especially since, a lot of times you're going to find it even cheaper than MSRP on Amazon. And so the idea is that we like to establish right off the bat that, yeah, things are going to have a little bit of a premium cost here, and it's not a lot, but we do work our operating costs into everything that we sell. And so like, that's just an expectation from the get-go. The second thing is that we do have an in-store day pass where it's not free of charge to just come in and sit down and play games. Really, this is stemming from the idea that we insist that the place where you play should be the place where you buy. And I don't necessarily think that that's a controversial thing to say. I think that there's a lot of free locations where you can just go and hang out and not have to pay anything. And that's cool. You know, like people's houses are really great for that. Libraries are really great for that. You know, and I don't know, people who just like... are fine with operating for free like that, but that's not like, in my opinion and in the opinion of the majority of the way that I see retail going, it's not realistic if you want to have like a really premium space. If you want to have all the bells and whistles and you want to make people comfortable. I mean, we just got our electricity bill our AC bill the other day, and I was blown away. And it's because, you know, it's a hot summer and, you know, the AC is up. We want to make people feel comfortable. But when you see that bill, you go, okay, well, it's a good thing that we, you know, like that it's not free to play necessarily, because we would not be able to do it if there was no kind of like daily kind of operating amount that was coming in. And so thankfully people have been receptive to things like that, but we also work in a lot of ways that, that see returns on with better margins. Like, for instance, we do a lot of in-house 3D printing on commission. So we've got a print farm with four filament printers, three resin printers. And so when somebody has something that they don't necessarily want to wait for or order online, or that they just have an SDL that they need a bunch of, as long as it's not copyrighted material, we're really happy to just be able to print that overnight for you. And yeah, there is a labor cost to it and there's a time cost to it. We do see better returns because of the low material cost. You know, like resin is not exactly the most expensive thing in the world. And print, and you can print a big model with a small amount of resin. So material costs are low, and so we see a bigger margin there. Same thing with things like the Warhammer Orphanage, or, you know, just like selling bits, or something like the D&D game. You know, like the D&D game brings in $200 per game, and it's just my time that's being paid for, and like I don't take any extra cut as the DM that runs it. You know, normally you would hire a DM, that DM would run it, and you'd pay the DM. And that is our plan moving forward in season 3, especially if we see more growth, or even if we see commensurate growth, we'll have to hire DMs, and then obviously they'll be paid, and they'll be paid a good living wage. But until that has to happen, I'm just taking on all of that that DMing work, one, because I love it, and two, because it was like a good idea that I had that I just really enjoy doing, and three, because it is the most economically feasible way to do things now. And those $200 games, you know, like are essentially, you know, like just $200 that gets to come in without any product going out. Like, yes, we're still paying overhead out of that. And yeah, there's still operating costs, but it's a far better margin than when you're buying a, you know, like a game from a distributor for $60 and selling it for $65, you know, like, I mean, obviously that's a little bit of a hyperbole, but like those margins aren't so tight when all that it's costing you is your time. And so we've really tried to focus on a lot of ways that we can make money with better margins. You know, like as far as like our merchandise goes, we do a lot of the drop shipping. And so, you know, like creating and having to stock inventory isn't necessarily a thing that we have to deal with. We just create the images, we make the mock-ups, and then we let a different company handle all of the overhead. And then when somebody buys a product, then we only see the profit from it. We didn't have to spend anything on the initial product. And so we're trying to just find ways of making money where there's money to be made, where the buy-in isn't so huge, is absolutely essential to the way that we do the business, but also carrying a lot of product that just doesn't have great margins. And then, you know, just kind of just knowing that, yeah, a lot of what this business is still, you know, dealing with small margins. But I think that forward thinking, business owners that have this like detached idea from what retail was and what retail can be will see a better return as long as they, you know, insist that the market change where it has to change in order for, you know, big premium stores to still exist, and also try to find ways of using skills and using new technology and emergent technology in order to sell a product where you get better margins.
And what to you classifies as a premium store? I know that's what you guys have, but I want to hear like what your thoughts are that go involved in that. I know, you know, some people are going to think, you know, just the size of the store qualifies, but I want to hear more of so from you what it entails and what practices and things that you guys are currently doing to facilitate that.
Right. So like, I think premium, and this has actually become quite a meme between me and my other business owners, because like we always go up, but premium experience, you know, like we like this idea of just like insisting that the experience must be premium whenever we make any decisions. So for instance, you know, like you may go to a game store that has a D&D night, but not all game stores that have D&D nights have a table that has a 55 inch screen in the center where all of the sides are powered, where there's smart lights and a speaker that you can hook into. So you can really produce a show when you're playing D&D. And not all game stores will have, like apart from the size, will have the space apart from the size, we'll have like terrain on the tables where it's a lot of terrain where you can build out different scenarios. They won't have gaming mats on all of the tables. They won't have comfortable chairs. Like we were lucky enough that we found a person that was selling just a ton of church chairs, and we got them at a really discounted price. So we've got these very, I don't know if you've ever been to a church, but they've got very comfy chairs at churches. And so we got these very big, very cushiony chairs for the entirety of our location at a really great price, which is really nice, because now when you come in here, you can sit on these things for hours and hours and not feel uncomfortable. You know, we've got a painting bar that's fully stocked with paints, with tools, so that if you forget your stuff, then I mean you're paying $5, so like that should get you something, you know, like if you're in here, if you're buying, and really the way that we do our day fee is that the day pass is not just give me $5. It is spend at least $5. If you can't find a way to spend $5 in here, then fine, just give me $5. But I always, as one of the owners, and the rest of my business partners are generally in the same habit, is to really suggest people don't just give us $5. Like we really want you to get something back for it. But if you're here, if you're buying, if you're a part of the community, a part of the cool that premium experience is to be able to share all of the things that we've accumulated as gamers with the customers. So when you come in here, if you want to use our paintbrushes, if you want to use our paint cups, if you want to use all of our paint, you absolutely have that option. You know, like we've got an airbrush area where you can use our airbrush, especially if you've taken our advanced paint class where we teach you how to use the airbrush, then now you're Warp Storm Airbrush certified and you can come and you can use our stuff. And you know, like these are the ideas behind the premium feel. It's much more than just like a cool paint job or fancy lights. It is to say this expectation that the tools are going to be good, that the chairs are going to be comfortable, that the game sets are going to look good, and that the, you know, like the The experience is going to be something that you can expect to pay a little bit more for, but you're getting so much for that experience. You know, like honestly, I've seen a lot of game stores in the area that have higher day fees than us, and really $5 per person seems like well more than enough, because when it comes down to it, it's more than just $5. It's not necessarily saying you have to give me $5 to game here. It is saying as long as we're the place you shop from, then we are happy to share everything we have here with you, because you shopping here facilitates that premium experience. We are able to do premium things with our location because you shop here. It doesn't matter that you're giving us $5 whenever you come. It means that you are helping the commerce in a retail store, and the commerce in a retail store is what allows us to do anything. And so that's kind of where like that idea comes from. We want to do more than what you often see. We want to be more comfortable than where you often are, and we want to provide more things than what you often get. And that comes with a little bit of a price tag, but it's not like in our mind like this large controversial number. It really is just kind of a way of saying, you know, just buy whatever, you know, like if you buy a boba drink, you're fine. You know, like it's really just kind of like a show of support.
And with all that you guys have going on, and it's clearly you're doing a lot, and there's a lot of variety offered to people coming to the store. Is it just the five business partners that manage the day to day, or do you guys have employees also?
So I cannot tell you enough how much I long for the day where we can staff this place. But no, right now it really is just the five of us, and we are burning the candle at both ends. I'll tell you, like it is, we're taking on a lot. We take on so much. And because we're all like passionate, we're all gamers, we're all young, we're all forward thinking. We all are all maybe biting off more than we can chew a lot of times. We have these like phenomenal, big-brained, pie-in-the-sky ideas, and then we stupidly try to do them all. And so it's a lot of just like everybody burning themselves up to make sure that this place is like the dream that we want it to be. But the other side of that is that, yeah, while we are burning ourselves up and making sure that like all of these things come to fruition, they are coming to fruition, and that is immensely motivating. You know, you see these dreams, these like just different emergent ideas, this market fluctuation changing to what you're creating. You know, like we see the effect of what we are doing in the local market, and that is some of the most intensely motivating like stuff you could experience as a retail owner. So while we do have nothing but work ahead of us every single day, and while we don't have staff because there's just not enough money for it yet, we're in a lot of ways very happy to do it based on, you know, like what it's returning, which is success in a very real, very motivating, very passionate way.
How do you guys divvy up the roles between each other?
So that was tough at first, but so like there was at first it was this expectation that we should all be doing what like everything, like all of us should just be doing an equal part of everything. And I think what we realized over the course of the last the first six months was that just does not work. You know, like you really don't need so many cooks in the kitchen for every single thing, especially not when everybody has a area of focus and just an ability to do something better than the rest. And so now what we decided at some point during one of our big meetings, because we do every third Sunday, we do just like a big sit down between the five of us, and you know, usually it goes 5 or 6 hours, but it's a big business, it's a giant ship, and so there's a lot to tackle. And especially when you're just kind of doing things on your own the whole month, when you get back to, you know, like your team, it's just like, okay, well, this is where I am. But what we decided some months ago was that we should all have areas that we're just good at, that we're passionate about, that we've got ideas for, that we've got time for, that we've got the brain space for, and then those are our departments. And then from that point forward, we just operate as if we were an island. We just do our own thing in the best way that we know how. And if you know, obviously we work with each other every single day. Like, I see these people more than I see my family. And so, I mean, in a lot of ways they are my family, but I see more of them than I see like my daughter or my girlfriend, because I'm here every day all the time. And so I do have the opportunity where something comes up where I don't have to wait for the meeting, and I can just be like, hey, oh, hey, I've got some ideas I want to run by you. But unless I need something, or unless I see something on Trello where, you know, like somebody's like doing something that I'm like, ooh, I could help with that. It's mostly just like operating on your own, doing the thing that you know how to do, working with the trust that everybody's doing their job well. And then just kind of like, you know, during the Sunday meetings, just going, okay, what have you been up to? But it was just a matter of just kind of deciding, well, what am I good at and what am I passionate about? And everybody going, yeah, cool. Cause we're lucky that there's not a ton of overlap, you know, like Quinn does a lot of like the buy sell trade. He does a lot of the buying of cards, the, you know, like the selling of Warhammer models, like the secondhand stuff. So he's just really good at that. He's got his like, you know, he's got his finger on the pulse of what the market moves like. You know, Muick is really good with, inventory and organizing, you know, like just the way that our systems work. Liz is phenomenal at accounting, and you know, like I've got, you know, like a little bit more of like a retail mind, and Carr is doing some like systems management, and like, so like it's just a lot of like, we just happen to be good at different things, and thankfully we learned how to divide the roles so that we were never kind of stepping on each other's toes.
That's great. I mean, the communication is everything. And, you know, one of the other aspects of your business that I, you know, I'm kind of a sucker for this, but I love hobby shops that have cafes in them. And I like that you guys have this with Boba Cafe. Was that, I know that you were talking about that's when, you know, you all came together to decide to do it. Was that something you had always envisioned being a part of a store? And do you feel like, how has that helped in terms of like with the revenue generating of the store compared to the gaming side?
So it's not personally what I envisioned my store to have. When I was theory crafting what my store would be before I was going to do anything with these guys, there was not a boba bar in there. There was a very little secondhand movement. I wasn't really going to focus too much on selling cards. I was mostly going to focus on D&D and experiential retail and things like that. So the answer lies in there, which is that I am 20% of this business. Quinn is 20% of this business. Liz is 20% of this business. Alex, 20% each. And it really feels like that, in that they brought 80% of this business that I did not have it in me to bring. And Liz, with having the idea to have a boba bar manga area, you know, like kind of gift shop, anime inspired, you know, like paper lanterns hanging from the ceiling, like this awesome aesthetic idea for what you wanted the cafe, was not something I was going to think up in a million years. And that is why I partnered with these people. It is awesome bringing a lot of experience and a lot of focus and a lot of ideas and a lot of like ability to do something, and knowing 80% more exists outside of me. You know, like it feels very cool that I can bring so much and know that four times what I bring in is being brought in by my business partners. And so it's not a thing that I envisioned. It's awesome that it was envisioned by one of us. And it's like, to talk about, you know, how it's working out for us, it's awesome that it was envisioned, because it brings in a tremendously different community. It brings in people that like maybe had zero idea what any tabletop gaming was, but they love boba and they love anime, and now they're in here and they're watching us play games or painting models, and they're just like, holy crap, I mean I really want to do all this stuff. And obviously all of the gamers that are in here spending their entire day here are constantly buying boba drinks and, you know, snacks at the lounge and stuff. And so yeah, it was an idea that was merged that almost seems perfect, and like the symbiosis there is obvious almost, but it's not at all a thing that I was going to envision in a million years. It's just not the idea that I personally had for for what I wanted a game store to be. But like I said, that's why I'm just absolutely grateful to be working with like other talented, experienced individuals, because they bring an 80% that I didn't, that I did not bring. And I hope that they kind of see it that way for what I bring, you know, like each one of us really is an integral part of this business, because we all bring this like very fresh, very individual idea for what more can be brought to this shared space.
And what are you all envisioning in terms of being a year in, getting the name out there further? What types of marketing are you doing? Do you do conventions at all?
Yeah, so we're pretty active with conventions. Actually, we're going to be at Dragonfall this weekend, which is a charity convention in like Geneva. It's about an hour away from here. We were just at a convention last week, actually, too. We were at the Cream City Convergence, which was a giant esports event where people were playing, you know, they were playing Guilty Gear and Street Fighter and a lot of Smash Brothers, and you know, we had a booth there, and that was based on, you know, previous relationships that Quinn and Carr had made while they were running Falklandia, and it was really nice to just have the opportunity to go and to meet other people that were gamers that weren't tabletop gamers, who were just like, oh, I've never heard of you guys, or oh yeah, I've always kind of wanted to get into Warhammer, and be able to do that. So yeah, we have an active presence in conventions. We see conventions and going to them as integral to the business, because it really is just a lot of people who like your thing there so that you can talk to them. We also go to conventions all the time as far as like research. Like Gen Con was just a couple of months ago. I went the entire days that it was going on, and I met with, I don't know, 100 different retailers and or not retailers, manufacturers, game developers, game designers, and just content makers. And I got to share experiences with them, you know, get their information so I was to be able to carry their product. Like, in fact, just yesterday we set up our Monument Hobbies Pro Acryl stand with the entire Pro Acryl line, and we're one of the only stores in the area that does it. And I got to meet the team when I went to Gen Con. So there, and you know, like that's how I met them. I met the you know, the distribution contact, and, you know, like it was really cool to meet a person and to have that direct contact. And I emailed him directly, and then they reached out. They said we could probably expect a reach out in like during the holiday season, and way before that happened, they had already reached out. And so we do see a lot of benefit to going to conventions and meeting with people, and not just like being an island here. But also the idea is to continue to promote ourselves on social media, to continue to promote ourselves as far as like tournament goes. We've last year we did a shared tournament with a local game store where we were going back and forth with the 40K stuff. This year we're doing another shared tournament with a local game store where we're going back and forth on Magic stuff. So like we like working with stores in the area, sharing the customers, making sure that everybody knows about us and that knows about other stores in the area. Because, you know, especially the way that I see it, there are more potential gamers than the, you know, 4 or 5 stores in the area can handle. Potentially, there are millions of gamers in the area. The only thing that's barring that is them knowing they're gamers. And so I'm not so worried about sharing the community. I don't think that that's a real fear that stores should have. The real work that needs to be put in is how to grow the community, because as long as you're growing the community, there's enough for everybody. There's so many people that don't play games. There's so many people that don't know what Magic is or what Warhammer is. And a lot of people that know what D&D is but never tried it. And it's just making sure that everybody, especially everybody in the community, is just doing their best to grow the community. Well, then you don't have to worry so much about like, oh, but if a store opens up in my area, they're going to siphon it. Like, you don't have to worry so much about that. You can just work with other people. So the idea is to work with other people to, you know, use social media. We've got a TikTok that we're trying to be more active on. We've do a couple of like cutie little unboxing videos for the Boba Lounge, and we promote a lot of our new boba drinks on TikTok, and really just kind of like trying to tackle what marketing is with every tool available to us. Unfortunately, the real thing about getting more customers is just time. You know, like word of mouth is the number one driver, and so you just kind of have to wait, you know, short of buying a billboard. But like, billboards are expensive, so so that's far too far down the line.
So for somebody like myself, and this is a question I love asking game store owners because I like getting that visual picture. How would you describe the layout of the store?
So it's pretty big, and thankfully we had a lot of room to play with. But the way that it really kind of just divvies up is that you walk into the store. On the left side, if you're looking in the store, or if on the right side, if you're looking in the store, is our gaming area. And in that gaming area, we have 48 seats for tabletop card games, and we've got six tables that are 4x6 tables for miniatures games. So, and then there we also have our open board game library. So like if you buy the day fee, you could just have access to all of the games that we have on our library. And thankfully two of my business owners are enormous board game nerds that were nice enough to bring a lot of their collection here. So when people come in, if they want to play, you know, like if they want to play Code Names, or if they want to play the Lord of the Rings Risk game, or you know, there's just a million boss monster coup, you know, there's just so much to play. If you want to play Wingspan, it's just here open, ready to go. You don't have to buy any game to be able to play them. And then if you want to take it home, obviously, and have it at home, you could just buy it. But like, that's what our gaming room is for. Directly in front, we have the D&D room, which is closed off by curtains. It's got like nice thick theater quality curtains, and inside it's just the game room. And then, or, you know, like the D&D room. And then if you go deeper into the store, we've got the retail area next to the windows where we have all of the board games. We've got all of the boxes for Shatterpoint and all of the expansions for all the games that you want to play. And then on the other side, on the opposite wall, we have our painting area and our print farm. So that's where you can just sit down at the hobby bar, paint. That's where we do the classes primarily for painting. And then we have our print farm there. So that's where I do the resin printing and the filament printing. And then on the other end of the store, we have the Boba Lounge, which is where, you know, we've got a lot of seating, comfortable seating, couches for a more lounges experience. And we also have 1,500 issues of manga, 1,500 manga books that people can just read as a part of our manga library, because one of my business partners worked for a bookstore for a long time and just bought manga like crazy. And over the many years accumulated 1,500 unique books. And then when we opened up the store, he's just like, oh, this is going to be a good place for that.
That's really cool. I just love the whole concept of, you know, almost like various tiers of the store that you experience something new in each one. I think it's a phenomenal job, Antonio.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Oh, my pleasure. And my last question for you is, what is an ambition you have for the store? And on the flip side of that, what is one challenge you're currently trying to figure out with you and your other business partners?
So I think the ambition and really, I think the craziest thing that I could say is that we're at least two of us, the three of us for sure, but at least two of us very passionately are game designers. That's actually where I saw my life going eventually. I wanted to be a tabletop game designer, and so is one of my business partners, Alex Carr. We both have a huge passion for not just selling games, obviously, and playing games, but making them. And so I'd say one of our bigger ambitions is this thing that we're working on right now, where we're making games in the store and we're play testing them with our customers. You know, like we just made this super fun game that we've been playing campaign style over the course of the last month, and that's received a tremendous amount of reception. And this game is one that, like, we had 17 players just playtesting it every day because they were enjoying it so much. And that's data, you know, like that's real, you know, playtesting data that, like, most game designers just really struggle to find. You know, getting people to sit down, play your game, play it, you know, like in a real way to try to find, you know, the bugs in it is usually harder to do. And we're really well positioned to be able to just have an idea, play the idea, play test the idea, see what works. And so I'm very passionate about moving forward to make games too, to have Warpstorm be a game developer as well as a game retailer. So like that would be my biggest controversial pie in the sky idea. And then I think our biggest hurdle right now is time. I you'll catch me hearing or saying this a bunch in the store, that I wish there was four more of me, or that there were four times the hours in the day, because it's really just the inability to get to everything, you know, like moving a store this large into a position of financial success is startlingly difficult, even with all of the fresh ideas that we have, even with the idea for how to increase our margins and how to sell products that have better margins, even with all of the work that the other owners are putting in, even with not paying ourselves, it still is a tremendous struggle to operate a machine this large. And one of the things that really is the bottleneck is time. There's only so much time in the day to get to everything. And so I think the biggest struggle moving forward is just making sure that everything gets done that we want to get done, so that it can be of some benefit to us. But it's just trying to organize your schedule, to organize the day, to organize your priority items, and to just make sure that you are, you know, just doing the best with the time that you have. But we'll see. I think one more year will tell us whether or not we did it or not.
Well, I think you guys are on the right track, and I wish you nothing but success. And what I wanted to just ask finally here is where people could find you online, and if they would like to come see you, and then they're in the Wisconsin area, where they could come check you out. I saw you're in Greenfield. That's how far is that from Milwaukee?
Yeah, so we're actually in like a suburb of Milwaukee. Essentially, we're if you were downtown Milwaukee, it would take you 10 minutes to get to our store. We're right off the highway, off of 43, off of the highway on 60th Street. So like we're literally off of the exit. It's the best location we could have hoped for. But if you want to follow us on our socials, we're almost on everything. We're on at Warpstorm MKE. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. And we're now more active on TikTok too. And then our website is just warpstormmke.com. We actually just revamped the website. My business partner Liz, she's the one that did it, and I could not be more impressed with what she was able to do, because the website went from being good to being just amazing. And so
it looks great.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I'll let her know that you said it looked great, because it really was a lot of like burning the midnight oil for her. Like I would see updates be uploaded at like 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes, and so she really worked hard for that. But yeah, that's where you can find us. We're pretty active on all of that stuff, and we're really good about communicating with customers when you ask questions or things like that. We love whenever anybody reaches out to us to ask questions, whether it be a retail question or just a gaming question, we love to interact.
Well, that's great, and I appreciate Antonio you making the time to come on the show today. It's been a pleasure having you on and chatting with you.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a really great time. I appreciate the experience.
This episode of The Match Slip is sponsored by Crash City Con, Roanoke, Virginia's premier gaming and fan convention. It's tabletop gaming at its best. In addition to role-playing games, board games, there are vendors, and so much more. Play with some of the top game masters in the area, enjoy a casual game in their open gaming area, or learn to play games you always wanted to play. Attend Crash City Con August 23rd through the 25th of 2024 at the Berglund Center Special Events Center. You could check out more information at crashcitycon.com. For everybody else listening, if you enjoy the podcast, I'd appreciate if you don't mind subscribing to it on Spotify. Additionally, if you want to hear my reviews about the game stores I visit in person, you could head over to thematchslip.com/newsletter, and you can get additionally a 15% off coupon to thematchslip.com/shop, where we have various t-shirts if you care to support the show. And if you just care to support the show in general, you could do so at patreon.com/thematchslip. And with that, I will talk to you all in the next interview. Take care.